And with a look in the backcountry from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center, Drew Hardesty. Hi, Drew.
Leslie, hey, good morning. We have two primary concerns in the backcountry, the deep slab instability. Generally, these avalanches have been 2 to 5 feet deep in isolated areas, though predominantly, but not limited to, northeast to southeast facing slopes at the mid and upper elevations. It's challenging because people see tracks every which way and all over the place, and yet some of these are pulling out, again, 2 to 5 feet deep, a couple hundred feet wide. It seems like we've had pretty much one every day or every other day, and most pronounced along the periphery of the upper reaches of the Cottonwoods. There's been a number of very close calls involving skiers on the uptrack in Kessler Peak, mid-Big Cottonwood Canyon, and then in the backside in the upper Snake Creek and Bonanza Flats area over the past week. These are rarely survivable, but we've had some very lucky folks and some close calls. Speaking of close calls, in mid-Little Cottonwood Canyon yesterday, there was a very close call. There were two people descending Little Pine Chute. It's one of the steep, radical chutes south-facing Little Cottonwood Canyon. They were part of the way down the couloir and had a natural wet slough cascade down from a few hundred feet above them. One person was caught and dragged 200 feet down the chute over cliff bands and lost a ski, suffered some shoulder damage, but they were able to get out on their own. This occurred just before noon. It was clearly too late to be in the steep southerly aspects, certainly the danger for wet activity will continue into today and likely tomorrow. So again, bottom line, Leslie, overall moderate danger for deep slab instability and rising to at least moderate for wet avalanches on the steep southerly aspects and even the lower elevation northerly aspects as well. We have a bunch of videos and information on the web. As always, you can go to utahavalanchecenter.org.
KPCW News Time now, 8:14. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour with the Summit County Council meeting tomorrow, starting in work session about noon at the Sheldon Richens Building. In the studio with a preview of the council's agenda, County Manager Tom Fisher. Hi, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
First, the council taking a field trip to the Woodward Gargoza site. When are they actually scheduled to sit down and make a decision on that appeal?
I believe that they're scheduled for the 28th on that. That's what we've put on our agenda schedule. A lot of stuff going on this month in regards to land use, so we're making sure that we know when everything's happening.
Yeah. So what is it that they want to look at specifically?
Well, I think they want to just get an idea of what both the applicants and the appellants are talking about in regards to the certain points. So where the proposed lift is going to touch down on the bottom and hit the top, and kind of the footprint of the building in relation to the terrain, so I parking as well. So all of those points that the appellants brought up, I think that's what they're going to be looking at specifically.
Yeah. Will you be floating balloons or anything so people have an idea of where this?
I don't think so. I think we'll just be listening to the two parties as they describe it. We have about enough time in the tour to hit the bottom of the property along Kilby Road and then drive up to the top into the neighborhood and kind of hike to the back and see where things are going to look like from the top.
So you won't be going across the highway from the Jeremy Ranch side to look at things?
I'm not sure that we have time for that. If we do, we might do that, but we know those two places we are going to hit.
Yeah, because that's one of the appeals comes from across the highway there.
Correct.
Now. Okay. Let's talk a legislative update. Any reaction to the ban on bans bill that failed, basically preserving Park City's right?
Summit County was kind of in the background helping out in talking to our local legislators, and our legislators just did a phenomenal job of defending what both Park City and ourselves have been talking about all the time, which is this is kind of a local choice, and we like to preserve local control in that regard. So we'll see what the county does with that in the future, but we appreciate that our local representatives really fought hard for what Park City had already put in place.
Yeah, there was a transportation bill that passed with an increase in the sales tax and also higher fees for electric vehicles. Do you see that as bad news for the county?
Well, I mean, we would like to see a lot more encouragement of electric vehicles. That's one of the strategies we're using in order to reduce our carbon footprint and lower emissions. And we might see that as somewhat counterproductive. It all depends on what that revenue is used for. And I've heard some, I haven't read it specifically, but I think some of that revenue will go into actually encouraging more electrical vehicle use. So that would be a positive thing. Other than that, there's a lot of things as part of that transportation bill that we'll have to digest through to make sure how it specifically impacts us now that it's done.
Senator Kevin Van Tassel's bill on oil and gas issues, basically sending everything to the Board of Oil, Gas, and Mining without the county now having a chance to tweak that bill. What does that mean?
So that was probably our biggest disappointment in the legislature this year. We got actively involved with that as it got introduced in order to see if we could have some effect on it. We had agreement from the counties that were directly involved with it. We could work on taking out some of the transmission portions of that bill, but it didn't end up happening before it got voted on. So, at best, we're going to try and influence the governor on his final decision on that. But that's where it's at right now.
So, was Tesoro maybe helping this along and maybe just waiting for something like this before they bring back their pipeline bill?
I have no idea how this links to the actual Tesoro issue. Certainly this was backed by the petroleum industry. So we just have to see what that ramification is going to be and what what that language specifically says so we know how to continue to defend ourselves.
Mm. And so under this bill, if Tesoro were to come back, would that pipeline get approved? I mean,
it all depends. I mean, so the whole concept of the bill is that if we can't come to agreement at the local level, the state gets to make the choice, or a group at the state level gets to make the choice. I don't know how that would turn out. I mean, would we have influence over that state body that would do that, or would it be more influenced by the petroleum industry? I mean, that's yet to be seen.
And I guess this kind of just goes back to where decisions are made on
That's
the local
correct.
Level or in the state level.
And it's a pendulum swing. You know, we of course believe that we are the best ones to make decisions at a local level. We are where the rubber meets the road. We're the closest to our constituents. We're the closest to knowing what's going on in our own areas, both cities and counties. And that's a strong belief of ours.
A bill passed that the county opposes, saying, I'm guessing that a police officer in a pursuit has to give, quote, duty and care to the person in the vehicle they're pursuing. Why was that something you opposed?
Well, I think it's a from the, you know, I should probably let the sheriff speak to this specifically, but just kind of a vague reference to something that we're not really sure what it means, what we're supposed to do, and it makes pursuit of crimes that much harder. So I think that's probably why the Sheriff's Association was not in favor of that.
The county did support a bill from Representative Mike Noel on rural online workforce education. What would this do?
You know, I don't know the specifics of that one. I'm going to have to allow our legislative folks in the county to give me a briefing on that before I make some comments.
Okay. So overall, good or bad session?
Overall, pretty good. I mean, what I enjoyed this year, and I think what the council enjoyed, is that we were a lot more active, a lot more involved with following what was going on, and a lot more involved with UAC and influencing positions that they were taking. And that's good for Summit County.
The Rocky Mountain Power Cooperation Agreement returns. Do we now have language that resolves Councilmember Roger Armstrong's concern to give the county some leeway to pursue alternative energy away from Rocky Mountain Power?
Well, I'm not sure if it totally takes care of his concern. However, he was very involved with negotiations of that language over the last few weeks. So I'll leave it up to him to make that determination for tomorrow. But we certainly went back and forth a couple of times over the last 2 weeks to get some new language in there. If you analyze the changes, you'll see that, especially around some of those time periods that we were committed to cooperation. And so we'll see how that goes tomorrow night. I believe we'll see that be adopted.
the appeal of the Colby School project is back, perhaps a decision. Will you hear once again from the appellants and the county staff? Or?
Well, over the last month, there have been briefings and arguments tossed back and forth as part of a procedure to put a record together on this. I'm not sure how the council will proceed as far as the hearing is concerned. If they have questions, they certainly can hear from the appellants and the applicants. But I believe they have all the information they need in order to render a decision if they care to.
Have they received more information since the original appeal hearing?
Yes. So again, the county attorney has gathered together all of the materials that were up until that point submitted, as well as the parties have exchanged arguments back and forth in regards to that, answering some questions that the council posed that night. I believe they've got a complete record now. In order to make that decision.
Do you think the council's ready to make a decision tomorrow?
I believe so, but, you know, I never like to make a full prediction on that because you never know how these hearings are going to go.
Anything else on the agenda that you wanted to mention? Or
I don't have anything specifically. It's just that we did our strategic planning session with the council yesterday. It was a very good visioning exercise on kind of looking out to 2030 in regards to, you know, how do we want the world to see and see and visualize, or how we visualize Summit County as some things might change over the next 12 years.
Hmm. Were you affected at all by the council retreat? Any changes in your duties? Or
No changes in my duties. The county, the ordinance for the form of government is exactly the same, so there's no change in that. We didn't really discuss that. We kind of talked about the overall vision of the county out to 2030, and then discussed kind of what the council heard from a joint meeting between the planning commissions and themselves regarding housing in order to further that discussion with staff.
All right. So what about your contract? Is that renewed during the retreat here?
No. It's renewed around this period of time. Of course, my contract, my three-year contract, had a provision in it that it just continues until we actually deal with a new written document. My anniversary date was the third week of January. So we've been discussing that, and it should be up soon.
Okay. And then in terms of the council's vision, I mean, is there anything that's different than where we're headed?
Well, I think the most compelling thing that I heard, I mean, it certainly reinforced all of you know, our emissions goals, our carbon footprint goals, our renewable energy goals. We don't want to see inversions in Summit County. We don't want to see bad air. We want the mental health state of our community and our community members to be sound and have services available. But one of the large things had to do with land use and transportation, and very exciting, almost unanimous independent presentations on this, but they really want 224, I-80, the Kimball Junction area, to operate a lot differently in the future. And, you know, so that means we've got some work to do over the next 12 years to really make that happen and to really fully realize what it is we want it to be. So a lot of work to be done there, but that was one of the main things that they talked about.
Where are we on the search for a new deputy manager?
So I did interviews last week. I've got some internal folks I still need to talk to that did apply for the position, and I'm in negotiations with one of the candidates right now.
Okay. We should know soon?
You will know soon.
Wanted to also ask you, just there was a big turnout at the public hearing last night in Colville on this Wahali annexation project. Rumors in the audience that the developers had come to the county and had been rejected. Did they even talk to the county?
Well, they didn't talk to me. I don't have any direct knowledge of that project at all, and I've been reading about it in the paper, in the Salt Lake paper, a local paper, and hearing about it on the news as well. So, you know, it's really a local matter for Colville. You know, since I was not involved with that in any way, I can't comment intelligently on the project itself. We will get that if Colville decides to go through with looking at that annexation, we'll get notice of that, and we will be considering it at that time as far as what impact it might have on the county.
There was a strong sentiment that Colville had better annex the property or they would lose control to Summit County. I guess your reaction to that, or perhaps even more to Arlen Judd's comments that he doesn't trust Summit County's Snyderville Basin mentality to do what's right for Colville.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. We've heard some of those same comments in regards to the East Side Zoning Code as that's been progressing through. You know, one of the things that I think the council has been projecting as they've looked at the East Side Code is that, you know, that type of development would not be allowed under what's proposed without strong support from a local government like that, because there would not be water, there would not be sewer, or those types of things without those types of relationships involved.
Okay. Anything else, Tom?
That's all I've got.
All right. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
That's Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Leadership Park City welcomes back W. Mitchell as this year's speaker at the annual community lecture on Monday, March 19th at 7 p.m. Mitchell joins me now on the phone. Good morning.
Leslie, good morning, and good morning, Park City.
So you're a longtime friend and colleague of Leadership founder Miles Radiman. You two met in Crested Butte when you were serving as mayor?
That's exactly right. Miles was a terrific resource for Crested Butte, heading our planning and a lot of interesting community building operations, and also creating Crested Butte as a national historic site. So all kinds of good things, and I was lucky enough to work with him when I was elected mayor of that august town.
So what's your message going to be about on Monday night?
Well, I speak all over the world, Leslie, talking to groups about taking responsibility for change. My message, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it, comes from experiences in my life. I was burned severely in a motorcycle accident in San Francisco in 1971, and then about 4.5 years later, up in the high country in Colorado, crashed my airplane on takeoff and broke my back and became paralyzed. And anyone can use any experience in their life as a stumbling block or a stepping stone. And I was fortunate to have people in my life that helped me realize that stuff happens, life happens. And then you get to choose. And you can choose to sit in the corner and feel sorry for yourself, or you could choose to say, what's next? What can I do next? And that's what I've been lucky enough to focus on in my life and share that message with others. And anybody interested in leadership certainly has to realize that you have obstacles in life, and then you get to choose whether to lead or to follow.
Well, I just read a book that said a leader is a man who, when he walks into the forest, is followed by others. Otherwise, he's just taking a walk. So how do you define a leader?
Well, I think leaders can do well by watching and learning and realizing what could be done, what needs to be done, and to get a lot of support and a lot of advice and a lot of resources from other people. That's why this leadership program that Miles has done all these years impresses me so much, because he's allowing people to come together and watch what others have done instead of just wandering off on his own and or her own and trying to figure out how he can push or she can push somebody into doing what they want them to do. How about a great leader, I think, is a great follower.
Okay, again, you're going to be the guest. I think this is, what, your second or third time to Park City as kind of a leadership speaker, yeah?
It's the third time, and I'm pleased that Miles has invited me back. It's been a great experience for me, and I've met some wonderful people when I've come to Park City. And it's a town in some ways, like Crested Butte, ski town, old mining town, a lot of beautiful vistas and places to see, so it makes me feel good. I'm in Santa Barbara right now, and that's a beautiful place on the ocean, but there's no place like the high country.
Yeah. Okay, you'll be, I guess, spending the first hour or so just giving the message and then, what, taking questions for the second hour?
I'll be happy to take some questions, and I'll I'll stick around as long as people let me. It's going to be a wonderful experience. I head out the next day to Dallas for a talk to a business group. And so it'll be great. I'm going to go to the Ability Center in the morning and talk to some of the staff. And then I'll be with some of the leadership Park City alumni around dinner time. And then, of course, share my message with the folks that will attend a little later.
Well, tomorrow's free lunchtime learning at the PC Mark features Dr. John Lawrence, who will talk about stem cell therapy for pain. He joins me now on the phone. Thanks, Dr. Lawrence.
Hi, Leslie. Good morning. Good morning, Park City.
So it takes place tomorrow from noon to 1 at the party room in the PC Mark. Tell us how stem cell therapy works. I mean, we hear so much about it today.
Yeah, it's a very exciting field, and there's new discoveries and research going on as to how it works all the time. What we're learning is the cells not only have the ability, it's your body's own regenerative process for healing. So these growth factors that you have, when there's damage or inflammation, your body are attracted to that that area of damage or inflammation, and they then signal stem cells to come to that area for tissue to be healed and grow new tissue, to get rid of scar tissue, prevent scar tissue from building up.
So whose
whose
stem cells do you are you using? The patients?
We do not use patients. There are a few different sources you get stem cells from. People can have it from their own bone marrow, from their fat tissue. We actually use it from cord blood and amniotic tissue that comes from patients who have donated it from a C-section. We get it from a local company, the Utah Cord Bank.
Okay. So how is this different than using perhaps steroids in a painful shoulder situation?
Sure. Great question. Completely different. Well, steroids are used to reduce inflammation. It's a very strong anti-inflammatory medicine. So it can reduce pain. It can reduce inflammation, and then hopefully that inflammation stays away and your body can heal. These are actually regenerating and healing the damaged tissue. They do reduce inflammation. They have a lot of other properties besides just regrowing tissue. But they're actually not just reducing inflammation. They're actually healing and growing new tissue.
Yeah.
Is it
more successful for some applications than others?
We're seeing tremendous success across a range of applications. Certainly the most common things that it's been used for our joints. There's athletes that you see all the time having injections in their knees, shoulders. We've used it in almost every, joint in the body, backs, necks, jaws. But there's a lot of applications now looking at for treatments with heart conditions, heart arrhythmias. They're using it with people who've had heart attacks. We've seen it reverse liver failure. They're using it with dementia. We're seeing results with MS. So really, tremendous amount of applications we're seeing success with.
And does it basically just postpone surgery when you start talking about joints?
Another great question. We the goal is that it would successfully heal the joint completely, depending how severe the level of damage has been. So if you have a patient who maybe has, let's take knees, for example, which are the most common things that we've treated. If there's a little bit of wear and tear, the cartilage has been worn down, people start having achy knees. The traditional treatment's been some steroid injections, putting off, like a knee replacement surgery, hopefully for a long time. With the stem cells, if we get it early enough, there's a thought that you could grow cartilage and forever prevent a knee replacement being necessary, or surgery being necessary, for example. If it's a lot of damage, that's going to be interesting to see. Stem cells have only been really here in the United States since around 2009 is when we were able to, research grants started going through. So we'll start seeing in the next years how well these joint injections have worked over the long term.
Yeah. How expensive is it?
It can vary. It's usually several thousand dollars. It's in the tens.
Yeah. Still cheaper than surgery, I'm guessing, though.
Yeah. And a lot better recovery. There's no downtime. Usually just a little bit of rest for a few weeks, not putting much stress on us. You're not dealing with the risks of surgery, and surgery certainly is necessary in a lot of cases and can be life-saving, but it's fun to see the level of recovery that we can have with these stem cells.
Yeah, and do you have the insurance companies on board with you, or is it out of pocket?
They're starting too slowly. It's out of pocket right now for most cases. There's a few insurance companies that we're seeing now starting to cover some of our patients' injections. So it'll be interesting to see how quickly they start to cover in the next years.
Okay. Again, Dr. John Lawrence will be at the PC Mark tomorrow, noon to 1 o'clock there at the party room. We'll give us a short presentation and then I guess just taking questions, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about cases we've treated, explain how they work, you know, questions people have, and certainly stay as long as people have with their questions.
Okay. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you very much.
It's Dr. John Lawrence. Well, the Project for Deeper Understanding will be hosting a public forum on Medicaid expansion this Thursday evening, March 15th. In the studio with details, I have Pastor Charles Robinson with St. Luke's Episcopal Church. On the phone with me, it's Riley Curtis. She's the campaign manager of Utah Decides Healthcare. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Hi.
Charles, again, as I mentioned, it's taking place Thursday, 7 to 9 at St. Luke's in the Snyderville Basin. The topic is Medicaid expansion. Tell us a little bit in addition to Riley, who is going to be on the panel.
Right, right. Oh, we have a panel of five. We have two legislators, Brian King and Logan Wild, and they are on different sides of this issue. In addition, we have Derek Monson, who is the executive director of the Sutherland Institute, a conservative think tank. And we also have the Episcopal Bishop of Utah, who's on the panel as both a moral leader and as someone who's been really active in working toward Medicaid expansion.
Okay. Are you moderating or who have we got?
Beth Armstrong's going to moderate. She's the exec at the People's Health Clinic.
All right. Well, the question being asked, is Medicaid expansion right for Utah? And I'm guessing both of you being maybe more on the more liberal side of things would say yes, Riley?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is something that the people of Utah have been working on for 5 years. We've, you know, had great success with the Utah legislature, getting it passed in the Senate, getting the governor on board. Unfortunately, we never got it quite passed in the third branch in the House. So the state of Utah allows us to do a citizen's petition, and that's where we're at now.
Well, last week, lawmakers had said yes, I thought, and legislation that was sponsored by Representative Robert Spendlove, a Republican, was passed, adding as many as 90,000 more people to the Medicaid rolls.
That's a great question. We actually, if that goes through, that would be the biggest expansion in Utah. However, that bill that they passed is subject to Trump approval, the Trump administration's approval. And the Trump administration just turned down Arkansas last week for that exact same request that Utah's going to make. So we just feel that there's no need to stop what we're doing and just try to do what's right for the people of Utah.
Yeah. The legislation, I believe, has some work or training requirements to receive the health care benefits. Is that not a good thing?
So that's up for debate. That's going to be for the courts to decide because there's litigation currently happening on the national level with regards to work requirements. The piece that the Trump administration did not approve for Arkansas and will likely not approve for Utah is that they're only expanding coverage to people earning less than 100% of the poverty level. And the ACA requires that you cover everybody under 138% of the poverty level.
So you don't sound too hopeful that this is going to get passed or be allowed under the Trump administration.
Not when there's a precedent already out there. Like I said, Arkansas was not approved for that exact same request that Utah is requesting.
Hmm. So you will then be moving forward with this ballot initiative that would allow everyone up to 138% of poverty level as the Medicaid expansion plan under Obamacare would allow?
Yep, absolutely. So the ballot initiative, we're not asking for anybody's permission except the people of Utah's to expand. We don't have to wait for the Trump administration to approve it. We just get to do it as opposed to the Spendlove bill, which does require that approval.
Mm-hmm. Where are you on that effort?
Yeah, so we've been collecting signatures since December. We are well on our way to hit our goal. Of course, as your listeners might want to know, we only have until April 16th to get our signatures in. But we are week after week hitting our numbers, and we're excited to get this on the ballot in front of Utah voters in November.
Mm-hmm. Why is it important, though, that we go to this 138% of poverty level and, you know, no cap on, you know, what Utah can spend? I mean, that just doesn't sound very fiscally responsible.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's what is required under the Affordable Care Act. If you want to get that 90-10 match rate, so 10% of the cost covered by the state of Utah, 90% match, actually by our tax dollars being returned to the state, that's the better investment as opposed to the traditional match rate of 30% state investment and 70% federal funds. So if you want that in that 90-10 match rate, you've got to go up to 138, and that's just the way that the ACA was written.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, that the bill under review here, or I guess waiting for approval, is could impact as many as 90,000 people. How many people out there do we know that would benefit if we were to allow the full expansion?
Yeah, so if we, under the Medicaid Expansion Ballot Initiative, 150,000 Utahns would gain access to affordable health care coverage that they may not currently already have access to.
Okay. Charles, anything else you wanted to add?
I just want to encourage folks to turn out and participate in the discussion on this. This is a very, very important issue morally, and it's an important issue in terms of what kind of society we want to have. I would argue strongly that while there's a lot of things about the healthcare system that needs to be changed and fixed, I think we have a really inefficient healthcare system and a very expensive one. So I'm right there with folks that worry about, as you mentioned, the overall cost of things. But we spend money on lots of different things that are not as critical as health. And I would recommend that we think about providing health care for everyone and then make whatever changes to the system we need to bring it into greater efficiency. So I really encourage everyone to turn out and participate in the conversation.
Okay, again, that's Thursday, 7 o'clock at St. Luke's Episcopal Church there in the Snyderville Basin. Riley and Charles, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.